Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Good evening and welcome to the show tonight. It's been such a beautiful day here in Boulder, Colorado. It's such a blessing just to be alive. The process of life is so rewarding when you can experience it to its fullest. Our show tonight is entitled Your Journey to Love by Simran. She's joining us on the show again for a second time. And as a host, you know, it's curious to watch people follow their path. And I'm most impressed with where Simran has been in just one short year. But I just wanted to take a moment and touch on the idea of self-love. This love topic, peace and love and happiness, right? It's such a simple word, the notion of love. And then when we take it to apply it towards ourself, you know, our journey to understanding the truth of who we are can be filled with all kinds of experiences. And oftentimes to really get in touch with the nature of love can be an ongoing process. And when we talk about self-love, I think it's kind of like a teeter-totter in that for so many of us, when we came into our life, the family dynamics, the conditions we came into might not have had an arena of unconditional love for us. So often our parents were doing the best they could. They had their own issues to work through, and when we went through our childhood, it was more of a trial and error kind of thing, figuring out where we fit in the dynamics of it all. And as we start on a spiritual journey and we start working through the ideas of forgiveness and compassion, and we move up towards the center of the teeter-totter, and that journey for some people can take a lifetime in and of itself. But I think we're seeing a new caliber of spiritual experience in mass. I think it's always happened on the planet that there's been sages and whatnot who have found that ocean of love within their own being. But once you get to that point of self-love where you're not going to have any thoughts or beliefs that don't truly and genuinely honor you. You're not going to make any choices that don't truly and genuinely honor you. There's a point where you reach the tipping point where the teeter-totter goes over to the other side and becomes stable there. It's like you don't drop back into the old patterns anymore. You don't drop back into the old paradigms or stigma of your thoughts and beliefs. You can live in a place of love for yourself, that unconditional acceptance of your life exactly the way it is. And there's a point where self-love turns into, I want to say self-worth, but it's kind of like honoring your potential in a unbridled way, where you trust yourself, you trust your soul, you trust your heart so explicitly that when a new idea, a new paradigm comes into your consciousness, there's not any hesitation or doubt about its validity, about its worthiness, if you will, for yourself. And that's a place where your life expands. And when you can land there in a way that is so absolute that you won't even give a thought contrary to anything that would suggest that you're nothing. I mean, that you're an exceptional being. You're a point of presence of love itself. You're a conduit of the love of your soul, the love of your heart. And when you can be in that space of self-love, then all bets are off. All the rules melt. The limits fade, and that it's a place of truly unlimited potential. When we talk about the show tonight, we're gonna get to it here in just a minute. This idea of love is such a totally encompassing aspect of who we are, who you are, you the listener. No matter what your life path has been, there's a place of love waiting for you as you, expressing through you. Well, enough talk about this love. Let's bring on Simran as our guest. She's the publisher of the award-winning 1111 magazine and the 1111 talk radio, and she also the author of IPPI Gold Award-winning Conversations with the Universe and Your Journey to Enlightenment, along with her new release, Your Journey to Love, which we'll be talking about tonight. And in addition to that, she's been on TEDx, Gaiam TV, and has spoken nationally and internationally on the Rebel Road Tour. Simran initiates movement into new paradigms for humanity through vulnerability, I love that, realness, right on, and loving expression. Join me in welcoming her to the show. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Les. It's a pleasure to be back with you again. I enjoyed our conversation before, and tonight is certainly to be just as intimate and vulnerable and real.
Your Journey to Love. You know, I've thought about that title for about a week now, thinking about this show coming on. Your Journey to Love. What made you choose that title?
And you know, I don't really think we don't thank you, and I don't think we know what love is. Most of us, I don't think we've ever even been in an environment of love. We've grown up with this idea and experience that has been called love, but was never really love at all, because the people that we were with were never really exposed to what real love was. And as I moved through my own experiences in the last few years, I very quickly have realized that most of us actually think love is a doing. We think it's a process. We think it's a method. We think it's a certain number of things that we do for someone, or the way that we approach someone, or even words that are spoken. And none of those things really encompass love at all. And I think ultimately why we are all here, the one true purpose on the planet, is to embody and discover the essence of self-love. And it is so much more expansive than what many people allow themselves to dive into, but yet our world, if you look at the events in our world, the world is screaming for us to do that very one thing, which is dive into ourselves and truly embark on the journey to love, which in itself is, because we're not on the journey, we are the journey, and we are not looking for love, we are love. And so it is the merger of those two things.
So it's to the personal experience of love, perhaps.
Yes, yes. And so often, you know, we want to paint love as that one blissful, that moment, or meeting someone, or soulmate, or, you know, something that happens kind of out there that is experienced in here. But love is so much more than that, because it really goes to that mystical depth of lover and beloved, that thing that Rumi and Hafiz speak of, or that the sacred texts also write about. And that comes from a place of really understanding that our lives have been created by our own doing. And oftentimes many of the events and experiences in our lives are the discipline of love to try to get us back to the essence of love that we are, and ultimately the truest of love that we are here to experience is our shadow side. It is the side that we want to call weak or ugly or sick or not good enough. And yet that was the part of us that agreed to every step along the way that might have been hard and hurtful and painful to get us to reveal our light and to discover our highest aspect. And so true love, real love, the journey to love, path of love, is the full embrace of darkness to light within the self, and that acceptance that you spoke of at the beginning of the show.
I like that. It's and love is so patient. it's like it eternally awaits our rediscovery of it.
It is patient. You know, it is all those verses. It is kind. It is all those things that we say. But what is not patient, what is not kind, what is not understanding personality or the identity that we lock into? Because when we lock into those personalities or identities, we're locking into agendas. We're locking into, I've got to work harder to be somebody so that I can feel good enough about myself. Or I have to look a certain way so that I can consider myself as beautiful as everybody else. It's the personality, the ego, and the identity that keep us from our essence of love, because we get more wrapped up in that costume than we get into the truth of who we are.
The idea that love had you in mind when you were created, or any point in your journey, you were talking about needing to look this way or needing to look that way, like there was something lacking in you now that prohibited the love from being there, and that's the mind's perspective. But love itself would say, well, it's you now. It's you here now without condition.
Yes, yes. And I think what we don't tend to realize or are taught as children or even as we move into adults is that the moments in our lives that take us into the dips, that take us into the places of sadness or anger or chaos, they're not popping up to try to punish us or because we've done something wrong. And they're not things to run from. Those moments are moments of pause where love is asking us to go a little deeper, where love is saying what in you needs to be held, be cherished. And I think that's the gift I was given, because I hit a really, really hopeless, devastated place in my life. And in that moment, I could either do one of three things, one of which is many people want to gloss over and get busy and move on to the next thing and say life is not as bad as this is and I'm just going to move and push forward. Or people succumb to that just enough and then they self-medicate. Or the final place that people go is, I just want to feel good. Let me go positive affirmate myself until a place that I can finally feel good enough, because this is not really the way life is supposed to feel. We aren't supposed to have these emotions. And I venture to differ on that, because I think it is when we let ourselves fall, when we let ourselves really feel the depths of our pain and our hopelessness, when we let ourselves go to the very cracks and crevices that might have even created those situations, we then finally touch our humanity. And the reason that I want to talk about humanity is because humanity is not that big, expansive world humanity that I'm talking about. We can't touch that type of humanity until we fully embrace our own. And that's the place that love's trying to take each one of us. And that is what will heal this world.
Wow. Well said. Can you share with us that moment when you came to that place where you had to make a choice?
I think what I'd like to share less is what that moment felt like. And in this book, I was very specific to not go into details because I really wanted individuals to stay in their own energy. We extend our energy outward so much through all the stimuli that's out there and trying to escape our own bodies that very rarely do things truly bring us back home to be grounded. And what I realized in getting to a place where, and I'm talking about that ugly place, that ugly cry, that place where you can't get up off the ground, where nothing will make you even want to step outside or get out of bed, that place where you feel like there's nothing left to live for, or it hurts so bad that the tears simply will not stop, or the tears cannot start because you're so numb. Those places that people feel when they have such utter heartbreak because what they had in their life is not what they thought it was, or they've lost something so important. Moments are happening more frequently in people's lives, and they're happening so that we actually allow the heart to crack open, to break open. We've hardened the heart. We've placed a shell around it. We've become guarded. We've become protected. And only when we're really willing to let it crack open and feel the warm, creamy center of the heart, will we actually know what to do with that? Will we actually move then, not from a place of doing and just being busy, as most of the world is, but we're going to move from a place of inspired action. But we should not move into action until we've fully gotten the impulse to rise. Until then, we're supposed to just rest and fall and allow ourselves to be there, because underneath all of that is true bliss. It is true enlightenment. And people would say, oh gosh, I don't want to go there. That feels horrible. I don't want to feel what that feels like. But if we don't, then the things that we're seeing on the news are not only going to continue to happen, they're going to continue to increase in intensity, because everything in the outer mirror is only showing us what is being blocked on the inner mirror.
Right. Right, I like that. And I like how you've left it open for the reader to experience it on their own accord. And I see what you've done by not sharing your personal experience of it, because, like you said, our society tends to put things in templates for us to judge it by, if you will, and I like how you're leaving it open for the individual experience.
Go ahead. We fall in love with stories. We run our lives because of stories. Television becomes an addiction because of stories for us. Even as children, it's the fairy tale that we are taught, and the fairy tale becomes embedded in our cellular structure. So from early on, we learn about stories. The thing that we don't realize is as we learn about those stories, we're told about the Prince Charming, the princess, the happy ending, but somehow we forget that in those stories, there's always a harrowing journey. There's always a poisoned apple. There's always a wicked sorcerer or sorceress or someone that's supposed to take advantage of us. And then we end up creating that in our lives because it's embedded in our consciousness. We watch it in our families. We watch it in our parents' lives. And then we paint that as what love is. And we recreate it again and again and again. And that's what we have to do, is dismantle the stories that are embedded in ourselves, both our familial stories, our generational stories, and the fantasy stories that have been told to us over time. And when we start looking at the stories, we start to see the patterns, we start to understand the beliefs, and we start to dismantle the personalities and the identities that we've locked ourselves into. And when we can do that, we take off the costumes, and we start to realize we're bigger than the identity we have locked ourselves into. And then we start to discover the true essence of what real love is and of what universal love has the possibility of being in, as, and through us.
Right. It's almost like the story is what we're comparing our experience to see if it is, quote, love or not. And love is so much bigger than any story. It's such a wonderful thing to behold. So why did you write this book, Your Journey to Love, and for whom did you write it for?
I wrote this book actually in the height of my own pain. I had to have it was due to the publisher. And the book that I was writing, I knew I couldn't turn in. I knew that I had to be off that I was feeling, and that as a writer, as an example to people, I've always been the type of person, I want people to know the reality. I want people to understand the truth of what the heart is trying to say. And in that moment, the best thing that I could do was write this from a place of exactly where I was, because I know that we're all the same. And we all want that experience of love, the real one, the one where there's acceptance and understanding and true compassion. And we're all holding so much pain in our bodies, pain we don't even realize is locked into the physical body, that I wanted people to have a pathway not only back to their bodies, but bridging that dark and that light, so that by the end of this book, a very sacred marriage took place, and that sacred marriage was internally. It was the lover and beloved. It was where the demon and the God within finally met and embraced. And there was an understanding that that one that we would cast as demon within was actually the one that loved us enough to go through every hardship and every painful circumstance in order for that moment of sacred marriage, acceptance, and compassion.
I think Rumi said it, the profane becomes sacred again.
Yes, absolutely. And it is such a beautiful walk. People can't realize the depths of self-love that we can actually touch that are so beyond the surface self-love of bubble baths or flowers or taking someone's self out to dinner. I'm talking about something really deep into the core, to where there's never any condemnation or criticism. There's full acceptance. There's no agendas to life anymore. And you are finally living freely, to where you are doing everything that your heart desires to do, not what you're obligated to or feel pushed to do. You know, there's a reason, Les, that oil is in the ground. There's a reason that gold is found deep in the earth, or that crystals are harvested deep in the earth. Our richness, treasure, is always very deep in the earth. These bodies that we walk in, these are earthen bodies. Our richness, our treasure, is buried deeply inside of us. And we are being called to dive deeply and dig for that buried treasure. And that treasure is going to look like coal or hardened rock on the outside. But when you crack it open, it is as brilliant as crystal. It is as beautiful as a diamond.
And that's our authentic self that is so beautiful. It's you know, people have this idea that when they know love, it'll, like we've been talking about, it'll look this way or that way, and so often they'll not see themselves as worthy or there yet, or they put it in the distance. And perhaps I have all these little idiosyncrasies that aren't quite it, and I have found that it's being you, being authentically you, genuinely you, without tether, just authentically being as you choose, that love's smiles the broadest, because that's our true self. Does that make sense? It's like, you know, however you like to enjoy life is exactly how you're to live it, so you can live in joy.
That's exactly it. And I love how you said that about being tethered. That's what we are. We cannot run away from ourselves. And so, you know, many people say, why do I have to do the inner work? Why do I have to dive deep into those places? And it is because of that tethering, that authenticity that you so beautifully have stated is touched and tethered to the very depths and shadows and places where we've been broken. And it is that authenticity, it is that place that wants to speak forth with power and brilliance. Our power is in our pain. And as I was writing this book, I discovered, you know, there's a two-faced intention that we all have from the moment we're children. And one of those statements is, I want to be so special, so unique, that I am like no other person on the planet. Each one of us has felt or thought that in some way. I want some gift that is just like no one else's. And yet there's this completely opposite intention that we carry too. And that one says, I want to be just like everybody else so that I can fit in. That is a giant ping pong match of struggle. To want to be so uniquely special and yet so completely like everybody else. And so we spend our lives bouncing back and forth between these two things. And the beauty is, it is through that story of struggle, the hardship, the challenge, that is what becomes our unique specialness. That's what becomes our difference, because no one has a story like yours. And yet what makes us all the same is that ultimately we began and we end as love and light. In that sense, there is no difference between any of us. And once we get to really see that, once we get to really see ourselves, to see, hear, and acknowledge ourselves, which is the ultimate desire for each person, then we will be able to see, hear, and acknowledge every other person on the planet as brother and sister, son and daughter. That is what will lead us to oneness and true love on the planet and an end to all of this chaos that we see surrounding us.
Absolutely. I like that. So what are the four sections of the path within your journey to love?
The way that I wrote the book is I divided it into the sections of mindfulness, heartfulness, willfulness, and truthfulness, because those are the areas of our life that we deal in. The mindfulness section in each chapter has to do with the chatter. It has to do with the thoughts. Those are things that are going to bounce completely through us constantly until we actually listen to them, address them. And so I created a way that people actually allow those to come so that we can really see what are the things that we're believing or that are passing through. And when we allow them, what tends to happen is they start to slow down, they start to stop, and you really can reach a point where there's no chatter, where there's none whatsoever. It is the pushing back that keeps it coming. It's kind of like trying to push back a wave. You can't do it. And so eventually you have to allow that to come. The next place is the heartfulness, and the heartfulness tends to be the place of pain, the place of heartbreak. That's what really opens the heart. If you notice when you get teary-eyed watching a movie or a commercial or hearing a song or reading a book, it tends to be because it's touched something in your own heart that you have felt before, and typically it happens to be a place of wounding that creates that emotion. And so the heartfulness is intended to really open the heart in a more gentle way so that you start to face those places in the past, but yet see them in a really beautiful way, in the crystalline way that they are, not as polished, but yet just as brilliant. And then the truthfulness section has to do with really becoming radically honest with the self about certain questions so that we finally face those things and can let them go. And finally, the willfulness section allows us to speak to that part of us that wants free will so that we take a step towards something that allows that free will to act and then step out of the way and rest so that divine will can then take place.
Wow. When you talk about divine will, how does that manifest through you as a persona of the One?
I have been such a willful person most of my life. I think that I've taken free will to the extreme. And a lot of us do that as human. We think we're letting go. We think we're surrendering. We think we're doing all these things. But just the mere fact that we're thinking illustrates that we're still all free will. We're still using that human capacity. I think divine will has kicked in the moments where I've stopped, where I've truly stopped, and where I've been at a place of rest, where I've made no decision, I've made no action, I've truly waited for the impulse to rise. And that's a very difficult place for a lot of people to go. You know, I tell people, if you really want to get clear, if you really want to experience divine will in your life, stop completely for 2 or 3 weeks. And when I say stop, I mean get in a bed, lay there, and do not move. No matter what thought passes through your mind, no matter what you think you need to get done, no matter how you want to get busy because you can't stand laying there and what's coming up for you to be feeling, completely stopping in your life is going to tap you into a realm of your divinity that you've never accessed before. And it's truly the place that Western society must go for changes to start happening.
And big changes at that. It's that the notion of beingness, to be in that field of love. So often we have a linear idea of how things are done. When you build a house, you draw the house, then you dig a hole, and then you make a foundation, etc. And it's this linear path, and that's how the mind interprets things. But love is like simultaneous. Everything happens at once, and it comes from that stillness, I suggest, where it's almost like you've had momentum in your life, your whole life. You've been walking, you've been moving, you've had direction, and when you can come to a place of stopping oh so completely, and I like what you said about it, to stop for weeks of time, bringing all of your life into that stillness and then taking your very first step out of that stillness in the divine direction of your life. I like that.
Well, you know, Les, people don't realize how we scatter our energy, how unrooted and ungrounded and out of the body most of us really are. I mean, you can see it just in cell phones. If you watch people with their cell phones, they are so engrossed in their cell phones and their Twitter accounts and their emails and their apps and their games, you literally can look at a person and you can see all of the energy pouring out of their eyes into the phone. So their energy can't possibly be in their bodies. The same thing happens in computers or when we're watching television or when we're even just looking at everything outside of us. This world is so enamoring that it pulls our energy out, and then we move into this place of excess. I want this, and I want that, and I want this, and I want that. And so the energy, the spirit, is pulled out of the very vessel that came to house it, which is the body. And so why people don't like to feel certain things is because when they stop long enough and those emotions start to rise up, it's because their spirit's coming back into their body and they're actually feeling the discomfort of the vessel because they've never addressed the discomfort before. And so what do? Is they get back out of their body again. They go back into the telephone. They go back into something else. And for us to really heal, for us to really find places of wholeness and connection and community and relationship. We've got to get in our bodies. We've got to understand that just being in your body is an act of love, because you're bringing spirit back into its home. You're bringing spirit back into a vessel that came to contain it and to hold it. And most people don't live in their bodies. It's unfortunate, and it's time to get back into those places. Otherwise, we're just floating. All of us are just floating.
You wrote in your book, "I got used to pain. It was my normal." How do you really get used to pain?
We all get used to pain. We get used to what just feels uncomfortable in everyday life, whether that is someone in a relationship that's verbally abusive, or an individual that's not eating well or not allowing the proper exercise, or we get used to the pain of constantly being at work and overworking, or staying behind a computer and straining our eyes. We're so used to the patterns and behaviors that we have numbed out to the sensory perception of what those things are doing to us. And we've become robotic. We've become these numb beings that are walking on the planet. And the way that I know this is true is because if we were not, then we wouldn't have hills and valleys in our lives. We would have that experience of oneness and utopia and peace that is our divine inherent birthright. But because we bounce back and forth between the highs and lows of life, typically into the lows of life because we're trying to be pulled back into love's embrace, and into the highs of life because we're running from what we think we don't want to feel. Because we're bouncing back and forth between the two, it means that we are actually succumbing to the numbingness of living with pain. And that's not why we're here.
You talk about in your book in chapter 8 where one starts dancing between the mind, heart, truth, and will. How would you describe that?
As we start to move between those different places, we begin to witness something. We start to see what the mind does. And then we start to flow into the heart. We start to learn how to be in the body. Most of us actually stay from the neck up. And when we're in the neck up, we don't have to feel anything below. And then we don't understand why we don't know our purpose, or we don't know a direction, or we can't find clarity. It's because we're not fully in the body. But as we start to move into the thoughts, and then we allow ourselves to drop those thoughts into the heart and feel them, so that we understand the emotions, what we're doing by involuting is actually expanding outward into our bodies, because the emotional body exists outside of the physical body. So when we move from the mental to the heart, we actually move more into the emotional. And then as we move more into the feeling body and we let the body feel it, we then ground more into the body. And that allows us then to really look at the mental body all over again from a different perspective. And so then we move further out the spectrum of our physical existence, from the physical and the emotional into the mental. And so what we're doing is we're actually dancing in the full energy that we are. And as we dance, what we do is we meet ourselves. We begin to meet the shadow. We begin to meet the orphans that are hiding in the different cracks and crevices, in the different energies of our various bodies. And we bring them into our present mind. People think that we are on a linear time frame where when we were children, if something bad happened to us, it's in the past. And we're past that because now we're in this space and we're moving towards the future. In actuality, any trauma that has ever happened to you, whatever the age it was, is always happening to you until you fully address it. And so that's why it's important to allow ourselves to go back and do this inner work. Because if you were someone that was abused as a child, that abuse is still happening to that child every single second. And that part is attracting events into your life that are like that abuse. So until we really face ourselves and embrace ourselves and love those parts of ourselves that others could not love, we cannot clear our history or the future history of the generations that are to come after us.
Right. And as you start to engage that process and start to have those feelings, and you gain an understanding of it. It's almost like the longer you push it away, the less experience you have of it and the less you trust yourself with it. But as you turn and engage the feeling and bring it into the body, you develop an understanding of it, and it's not as intimidating, and then you can stand in that place more authentically, and I could see how that would get to be it would feel safer. I mean, if somebody had never allowed themselves to feel that pain, it can be intimidating, and then you go there once and you go there twice, and after a while it's like, well, wait a minute, this is not going to decide who I am. And in that knowingness, then you can take it on wholeheartedly and embody it and embrace it.
And the other thing that happens, Les, is there's a love, there's a compassion, there's an understanding of who that person was from a place of such depth. And when we learn to accept and have compassion for that one, all of a sudden the field broadens, and we are able to then have compassion for those that played their roles in the story, that participated. And when we're able to finally see things in that way and understand that we really created an event to truly get us to understand a greater gift, we're then able to also see the outer world and other people in those ways. And that's where the shift happens entirely, the perspective. It really is all a shift in perspective, isn't it? To be able to love another person. You know, I was sitting there contemplating yesterday, and I was thinking about a victim and a victimizer and what the two are really trying to say. And the person who is the victim is saying, please see me, please hear me, please understand me, please love me. And the person that is the victimizer is really saying, why can't you see me? Why can't you hear me? Why don't you understand me? Why can't you love me? They're saying the same thing. So how do we get to a place in this society, rather than judging, rather than condemning, we are able to look at all people from a place of compassion and understanding? It doesn't mean that the behaviors don't need to be addressed, but instead of placing Band-Aids on society like we do on wounds and surgeries, can we really get to the core issues of truly embracing and holding our society from a different perspective so that real change occurs? And for that to happen, we have to first be willing to do it for ourselves, because we are all both victim and victimizer, demon and God, angel and that which would be disguised as anything other than an angel.
Right, I like that. So can you elaborate on the idea of releasing judgment in connection with your quote, you are experience experiencing itself?
I think oftentimes we look back on our lives and we tend to have these thoughts of certain situations where we feel like, I wish I had never done that, or I wish I could do that part of life over, you know, have a redo. And ultimately, we are all here as experience. The things that we have experienced in our lives took place so that we could grow, understand, move to our next best step. for us to constantly judge and condemn ourselves for something is doing nothing but creating more shame and guilt. And that's probably the biggest disease on the planet today, is the amount, the degree of shame that is held. It is probably the greatest thing that we pass to our generations, rather than speaking openly about anything that has been done. If we can allow ourselves to understand that everything that has taken place is simply experience, experiencing itself in all of its different forms and functions, in its polarities, in its opposites, even in our emotions, the moment that you got angry and said something to someone that you think you should not have said, what if in that moment that was the experience of anger? And if in this moment your allowance of compassion and love for yourself and understanding not only release the anger, but allow release the conditions around that experience? How deeply can you love yourself? How much love can you stand? Because that is the question of the hour, is how much love can you actually stand? Because there's a whole lot of love out there, but not a lot of people are soaking it in for themselves.
And to embody it, to receive it without hesitation or resistance of any kind, is to be that point of loving presence in the middle of the storm.
That is probably the greatest gift that loving presence gives us, because it allows us to learn how to walk placidly among the noise. That's a moment that takes place when you finally reach such a depth of love and compassion for yourself that it doesn't matter what happens outside of you, none of it rocks you. That you're able to love all the beings that are out there doing whatever they're doing, understanding that there's such a greater play going on here. Again, it doesn't condone behaviors, but it sees them from a completely different perspective, that loving kindness place that you just spoke of, Les.
And to be in that place of love without judgment of another, the person in pain, the person in fear, the person in violent confusion has a beacon of truth. I mean, it's not like we're going to, like, I see a future with heaven on earth, and heaven on earth comes when we integrate all of our humanity, when we integrate all of our pain body, all of our separation. And when we look on the news and you might read a post on social media that says an eye for an eye, let's wipe them off the planet. And it's like, that'll only perpetuate pain.
Exactly.
It's only from a place of acceptance and compassion that the pain can heal, and if we don't resolve the pain, we'll be back.
Well, if fear is only going to breed more fear in us, then again, all we're doing is saying who can throw the bigger punch. And you don't stop a fight by people continuously throwing punches. But if we can look at something, let's say ISIS, if we can look at that experience, understanding that the behaviors that are taking place are horrific, but if we can stand completely holding love and compassion for the people committing the crimes, saying these people are wounded, these people are broken, these people have been brainwashed into believing whatever they've been believing, can I find that place in me where I've been wounded or broken in such a way, where I've been brainwashed to that degree, and what that would feel like? And if I can find that place of compassion, can I in my heart and from my being just send them love, just hold a space of love around that? You know, we want to say we believe in miracles. We love to talk about synchronicities. We love to talk about mystical happenings. We are that mystical happening. We are that miracle, but we're not activating it in ourselves. 4% of wholeness and goodness and the power of love can overpower 96% of negativity. It's been proven in scientific studies that the power of prayer can change things across a planet. So why would we use the very same weapon that they are using to try to combat that? Let's use a power that really works. Let's use a power of love and compassion. And from that place, apply the discipline. From that place, put in the necessary steps to also alleviate it on a physical level. But always from a stance of love. Because that is the only thing that is going to bring peoples of the world together and solve the problems that we have.
Amen. I totally agree. Well, time flies when you're having fun. I wanted to take a moment to see if you'd touch on the concept of Trinity in your journey to love.
You know, it was really interesting when I was writing that section of the book because I had decided to get a puppy. And I needed a very tiny puppy because I was living on the sixth floor of a building, and the building didn't have much grass around it. And by the time I would get downstairs, the puppy would have pooped. So I ended up finding online this little Min Min pin that just called out to me the moment I saw her picture. And I happened to look down, and her name was Trinity. And I happened to be writing the chapter on Trinity. And to me, there's sacred trinities that we go through in our experience, and I write out 13 different degrees of the Trinity that actually play out in our lives in a basis of consciousness. And it goes through the entire human soul experience so that people can really understand the polarities of what the shadow wants to experience all the way to what the God self wants to experience on each level. But from a very basic level, the Trinity has to do with the shadow self, the highest self, and the Holy of Holies. That is the ultimate Trinity. That is the final three. And three is a very sacred number. I wrote about that in my first book, Conversations with the Universe, of how the threes show up. And for us to really merge into our divinity, it has to be a merging of that shadow side of us, that highest self that we always aspire to, and the knowing that we are God's walking, that we are each a spark of God that has come here as experiencing itself to live out its full polarity of experience, ultimately knowing its grand expanse of light, sound, and color, and spreading that on the planet. And so the Trinity is that first sacred step where we then move into becoming the Divine Mother, the Divine Father, and the Divine Child, where we father and mother ourselves from the place that we wish we would have been fathered and mothered in the human sense, but we now lead ourselves as that Divine Child, fully playing on the planet to the greatest of our abilities.
Very nice. Well, what is the sacred marriage of the self?
The sacred marriage is when we're finally willing to let the two parts of ourselves meet, really embracing that side of us that is the negative side, the shadow side, the ugly side, the weak side, the broken side, the one that was chaotic and confused or didn't have a clue, and letting that side finally meet with that light self, that higher self that so many people often keep aspiring to or looking towards or trying to get the guidance of, and understanding that we've always been both at the same time. The beauty of this experience is that we can be as wounded and as broken as we are, and yet at the very same time we are completely guided, completely holy, completely pure and innocent as our highest self. And when those two meet and merge, there's a mystical marriage that takes place, and that is the marriage of lover and beloved.
I like that. A lot of what you say ripples with Rumi, one of my favorite poets. Well, so what's next for you? I mean, how do you see your manifestation of your divine will playing out in your life?
Right now, I know that my guidance is telling me just to stay in a position of rest and stopping, and that the only thing that I'm here to teach people how to do is to be nothing and do nothing. That is my ultimate mission on the planet right now, is to teach people how to stop, because everywhere I look, people are rushing, and they're moving, and they're busy. They're so busy that they can't even stop and think or feel. And so I also know that they're tired. You can see the tiredness. You can feel the tiredness in the air. And so for people that want to get off the wheel, that want to stop the rat race, that want to really understand and trust life and know that there's something greater that's actually got them and can lead to something much freer and much bigger, that's what I'm here to do, is teach people how to stop.
Wonderful. I like that. Well, how can our listeners get a hold of you and get a hold of your book?
My website is iamsimran.com, iamsimran.com. My books, Conversations with the Universe, Your Journey to Enlightenment, and Your Journey to Love are available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, any of those places. So they can find out more there, or I'm constantly listing things on social media.
Well, very nice. I want to thank you for being on the show. I very much appreciate the passion of your message and the sincerity of your heart.
Well, Les, as usual, it's just been a pleasure being with you, and I really, really appreciate the depth of conversation and the depth of knowledge that you hold. I'm excited about your new book that's also coming back out soon, and you are really such a gift in what you're doing and what you're sharing on the planet, so thank you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure. See you again soon.
Okay. You know, when we can slow down and be still, like we've talked about, like Simran has talked about so eloquently tonight, there's an ocean of peace within our being, and it's inherently part of who we are. We can't ever lose it. We can lose the sensation of it, but it doesn't mean it's not there. It always waits for our rediscovery of it. No, enlightenment isn't a creation, it's a discovery, because we are already the truth. And when we contemplate who we are and hold a place of compassion for ourselves, we can find out that we are here to be just who we are. That authentic impulse within you is the idea your soul had for your life before you even incarnated. And I want to tell you thank you for listening to the show and other shows like it. You can go to New Human Living, and these shows are in the archive. So when you're driving to work, dial up a show and take a listen to it. There's been some really wonderful guests on this show, and it's a great way for you to grow yourself, to have compassion for yourself and love for yourself. Thanks for listening.
This has been a New Human Living radio broadcast. You can raise your own personal power with Personal Power Fundamentals Home Study Course at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.